Greetings, friends. Welcome back to another episode of Adventures in Design, episode 1333. I don't know why I get so jazzed about the numbers, but seeing all of those threes in a row, it just feels like good design, even though I'm in simple text and not using the best font, but I can see the potential. And there are people in our world that are just good at seeing potential, right? Let's take Mitch Putnam, for example. Mitch Putnam, much like Hammer from VG, who's my co-host on Fridays with Hammer Time, come hang out with us. I guarantee you, you'll have a good time. There are people like Mitch that are just vibe techs, right? Like they go through life, seeing potential, just curators of culture, right? Like when Mitch got on the poster scene, he started his blog, OMG Posters. The blog then became a real sort of, I'll say this, he wouldn't say this, but it became a bit of a kingmaker, right? Like if you could get posted on OMG, back when blogs were still important, before social media had taken over all the power, if you got posted on there and you were somebody that already had an audience, like, you know, myself or Delicious or DKNG, you could see a massive spike in sales. But if you were a young gun, you could get discovered there and instantly start to cultivate a following just by Mitch seeing your potential, liking your poster, and putting it up there. One of the things I'm trying to do with Adventures in Design in 2021, keep wanting to say 20, it just, has it been the longest year or what? Today, the 1 year anniversary of all realizing like, this isn't going to go away. We're going to be here for at least 2 weeks. And speaking of Hammer Time, one last plug. Tomorrow, me and the boys, we pop bottles celebrating 1 year in the backyard, still recording throughout the entire pandemic because, you know, essential workers. But getting back over to Mitch and my goals, now that I've sort of diversified my business and I have a whole other Circle of Trust type platform for the Disney content, now that I have the Hammer Time boys on Fridays to kind of hang out with and just sort of do that loose format show that I always wanted to do. And now that I have my good friend Mort on Mondays, just to kind of have that bromance, heart to heart, ball busting, Tuesdays and Thursdays are going to really get back to interviews. And I'm going to try very, very hard to talk to as many people, as many different people, as many new people as possible. Don't worry. Bad Design's coming back, Podcasters is coming back, DKNG show's going nowhere. But today's episode is an example of where I want to be taking things in the course of this year. And Mitch Putnam ties into this because we had so much fun doing the poster countdown. And he said, hey, would you be interested in talking to Attack Peter? And when I went over and looked at Attack Peter's YouTube channel, I instantly wanted to meet him. And in fact, I, you know, bookmarked the channel. And one night when I was uploading my video, I caught him and his wife, Gabby, doing a live stream. And I sat in, I was watching somebody do something. And I'm not saying that they're influenced by me. I don't even know if he's even really aware of who I am. But I saw something that just felt familiar, like the early days of Adventures in Design. And there was a part of me that probably wouldn't want to have done an interview with somebody like that a few years ago. But my mind is just so different now. I'm so comfortable in my skin. I'm so comfortable with my little corner of the internet, what I'm doing and who I'm doing it for. And most importantly, how I've been able to diversify all the different parts of my personality. So I feel like all the things that make up me, all those little tiny robots, have a place to be until they need to come back together to become Voltron unified together. And I guess one of the things that I'm really trying to lean into is that it's interesting to see somebody taking the same path that you're taking. And there's a part of you that can sometimes be a little bit jealous or a little bit, nobody made it easy for me. But then you have to stop and remember all the older guys, and sorry, for my particular situation, it was guys, older guys in business that mentored you, that groomed you, or just sort of pulled you aside and said, hey, dummy, this is the way that it works. This is how you want to get to where you're going. I have to take that back. When I was a freshman in high school, there was a senior in high school. Her name was Valerie. I was head over heels for her. She cared nothing about me. Valerie was one of my first mentors. She was the one that dropped that mixtape in my hands and said, you need to learn who the Cure is. You need to learn who the Smiths are. You need to learn what Depeche Mode is. So shout out to you, Valerie. She also gave me the book Less Than Zero, which, fun fact, would be the only book I would ever go on to read. But man, I love that first book by Bret Easton Ellis. And if you ever ask me, Bricky, have you ever read? The answer will always be no. But as I talk about mentors and the people that help us to go along the way, you're just a jerk off. You're a jerk off if you don't give back. You're a jerk off if you don't help out others, if you don't give others like a break that maybe you wish you would have gotten, or maybe a break that you indeed did get, but it's just easy to say, nobody did anything nice for me. So I guess what I'm saying is expect lots of new voices to show up on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And sometimes they'll be the big names in design. Sometimes they'll be people that you've never heard of that have had a life in the creative force. And sometimes it might just be up-and-comers that I think need a little bit of a push to get over that hill. I'm very comfortable with where I'm at. I'm very comfortable with what I've been able to accomplish in 1,333 episodes. And I guess what I'm here to say is I feel like the best episodes lie ahead of us. Friends, are you ready to say hello to your new friend, Attack Peter, an accomplished illustrator, now an accomplished toy maker, just released his first product through Mighty Jacks. Also, an accomplished printmaker. If you like that Derek Castle type of woodcut stuff, whole lot of that happening today. And also, an upcomer on the art design YouTube scene. A little bit of a wild scene, but if I feel like if anybody can plant their flag there, it's going to be Attack Peter and his wife, Gabby. What do you say we get started with today's episode? As I've said twice now, episode 1,333. I just love all those threes. Boom, 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 boom. Hey, friends, before we get started with today's show and you get to meet your new friend, Attack Peter, I want to make you aware of GarmCompany.com. Don't forget, you always get a discount on everything that you buy site-wide. Coupon code AID. Amir has done it again. He has dropped Big Book Volume 3. This is the end of the trilogy. Some very fun stuff coming up with Big Book and these books of inspiration, these books of clip art, these books that really can kind of indicate, hey, these are how creatives before you have done some creative problem solving. Maybe the answer for your next creative problem is inside of these books, or maybe there's an influence in there that you can put into your own bag of tricks so that you keep evolving your style with tons of influence from successful design over the decades. It's Big Book Volume 3, the end of the original trilogy. But trust me when I say good things coming from AID and GarmCompany.com. Go over there and grab Big Book Volume 3 and get your AID discount, or get the entire trilogy and save more than normal folks because you listen to the show. GarmCompany.com, coupon code site-wide, AID. Peter, what's going on, man? How are you?
Oh, Mark. Nice to meet you, man. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. So the real name, work me out here. The real name is Peter Santa. Is it Mara or Maria?
Santa Maria, like the ship.
Damn, that's a cool name, man. Like Attack Peter is cool, right? Like Attack.
Yeah, yeah.
But Santa Maria, I mean, that's pretty cool. I mean, you got Santa in your name. That's sick.
You know, it's funny. I'll talk a little bit about that. I taught for 13 years, and quickly your name as a teacher goes from Mr. Santa Maria to Santa. And yeah, it's cute when it's like little kids calling that. But when you're teaching high school and they're calling you Santa, I'm like, yo, don't get your expectations too high.
I love
but,
that.
You know, the funny thing is Attack Peter was kind of like, and I know we have this similarity in our background. Like I've listened to a lot of your talks and seem to have come up with a gig posters and doing like Warped Tours and punk rock shows and all that kind of fun stuff. And
yep,
I was in a band forever and loved, I played Warped Tour one date.
Ernie Ball story. Stage?
Yeah, exactly. and I got to design a pick guard for a Music Man guitar, so it was like a full circle moment.
Nice.
But the point was that I was always coming up in that band culture, that rock band culture, punk culture, and so my buddy and I, Brian Reedy and I, started a website together in like 20 2011 or 2012 called Attack the Planet. And so we just decided, oh, okay, well, your email will be Attack Brian and mine will be Attack Peter. And it just kind of stuck like that, kind of like a Kevin Seconds deal.
Right, right.
And so it's all it ever meant. And then funny enough, I kept considering changing it over the years because, you know, the website, you know, petered out. We didn't end up using it. And I'm like, well, just this doesn't mean anything. We should probably change it. But the funny thing is, like, it kind of caught on for some reason or another. I never changed it. And when I linked up with Skybound, it was one of their favorite aspects about the branding was the name that kind of stuck. And I'm like, man, I was always embarrassed for how dumb and corny it sounded. But it's kind of taken on a second meaning where, for me, it was very difficult to get into this business, into this industry. It's been difficult to find a way in. There's a lot of times where you can kind of just feel like, maybe this is not for me. Maybe I'm not supposed to be.
Sure.
You know, and so it's kind of like taking on this meaning of like Attack Peter, as like Attack comma Peter, like reminding myself, like, go after it, get after it. Don't give up, you know, stay focused on the goal.
I've always liked the word attack. I like words that begin with the letter A because A is so flexible from the design perspective, you know, which way that it shifts. It has a lot of motion in it. The double T is a second A. The, you know, a K also something you can kind of bend around a little bit. I've always thought that the word attack was just aesthetically like a beautiful word. And then it also, it can mean so many different things. And I can see why somebody like Skybound, you know, if I'm looking at, well, there's a new artist, Peter Santa Maria. I'm like, oh, like the fucking boat or Attack right. Peter. I'm like, oh, Attack Peter now has my interest. Dude, I have a great Kevin Seconds story, and I'll keep it quick for you.
Go.
Back in the day, me and my friends thought, what would it be like if we did our own punk rock festival? And this was in the mid-90s when they were very, you know, punk rock skateboarding is always like a decade ahead of the rest of the world. And they were already very, like, politically correct and very much sort of in this world that everybody else caught up with in 2020. And we're like, let's make one that's just fun for the sake of fun. And we called it Crazy Fest with a K. And the idea was, is because I'd been kicked out of nearly every festival for being too rowdy. So we're like, I will be the MC, and we won't play any music in between bands. We'll do like karaoke and get the audience involved because I've always been like a big audience and interaction guy. And I'm like, we'll do arm wrestling contests. Like we'll have it's always going to be a show. Even when the band's not playing, there'll be some sort of spectacle. So fast forward, we did a reunion of it in the 2000s and I was the MC and I was supposed to introduce Kevin Seconds. He was doing like his solo thing. And he goes, give me just a minute to check my guitar line. And I go, okay. So he stepped out and he checked his guitar line and he just started the show. He completely snaked me. He's like, I don't want this fool fucking talking before I play. And I'm like, well, Mr. That's Kevin funny. Seconds, you fucking sneaky punk rocker, you old motherfucker. All right, let's jump in here. Yeah. This is why your career is confusing and why you're the best person to have this career. I'm going to give you an industry secret that most teachers don't know. Kids are stupid. And what they do is they latch on to the last thing that they see. So when they see a guy like you doing, did the Kids Are Stupid offend you? I've lost your camera.
No.
He's like, he just pulled a Kevin Seconds. He's like, fuck this guy. I'm out of here. But no, like, and I'm being funny when I say that, but
yeah.
Kids, and I'm talking about college level kids, you know, yeah. People that want to get into the industry,
right.
They see your Spider-Man. They see your Black Panther. They see your Iron Man, all three awesome pieces.
Thank you.
And they see that and they want to do it. And now because you're a teacher and you've put in your time, academically speaking, because you understand how it is to talk to young people, you're a great person to have that career because a lot of professionals at your level don't have the tools that society gives them as being a teacher, as putting in your time, being around young, vulnerable people to explain to them why you can make your own Spider-Man at home. If you want to get noticed by Marvel, make Spider-Mans all day long. Yeah. But when you go to sell your Spider-Man, understand that you might be blackballing yourself for the rest of your career. So I'm very curious how you've navigated those waters because I watched one of your live streams with your wife as a co-host, absolutely adored it. My YouTube video was uploading. You were live. I'm like, oh, this is perfect. They can keep me entertained while I'm uploading. And you had kids you know, you had younger people calling. I'm old as dirt, so I'm gonna say kids a lot. You had younger designers calling in on your number, and a lot of them I could tell were very naive, very lost, but very inspired by what you were doing. And I found like this is the guy that should be doing this, because you have twofold. You have what it means to be a teacher and explain things out in great detail, and the patience. You have a lot of patience, and I want to celebrate you for that. But you also have the real world chop. So you're not like those that can't teach.
Right. You know, dude, there was very little, you know, known to me when I got started, like out of college. In fact, like I was saying before, like I never knew what I was going to do and how I was going to get there. I just knew that one way or another, I wanted to be among the people that I cared about and respected the most, you know, outside of my family. That would be all the musicians that I loved and all the artists that I loved.
Yeah.
One way or another, I got to be in those circles. I want to have lunch with those guys. I want to, you know, that's just all I cared about. Yeah. It's like, how do I be in those collectives, in those, you know, groupings? And it was less about me making a name for myself for my own sake. And it's more about getting, you know, some level of notoriety just so that I can walk in the door, say, hey, I can hang, and I want to just absorb this. And so for me, whatever it took to get there was what it was going to take. And I got into teaching because right out of college, I got signed to a record deal when I was like 19 years old to Roadrunner Records.
Wow.
And it was
Home of Nickelback.
A band I was in called Twice the Sun. And we were all young punks, and we did, you know, we hustled. I talked about this the other day on a show with a rock and roll beer guy, a great show you would dig, by the way. But the point was, we had this upbringing that was so unique, that was being in bands at the 15 years old, 16 years old. I opened for Iggy Pop when I was like 16 or 17. It was hilarious shit. But at the time, you're just like, whoa, this is so cool. You don't realize that you are getting the best education you ever could get in your
100%.
Life. Because none of those people play by any sets of rules.
No.
It's all about themselves and doing whatever they can to stay up afloat. And if you're a kid who's just in it for the love of it, like you could be fodder really quickly. And the idea was that I hustled so much back then. I grinded so much back then. To what end? I didn't know where I was going. I just knew that I had to stay afloat. And as I got older and the band thing fell apart, I realized I had to go into some other creative industry, because the reason the band thing fell apart is my singer at the time decided he didn't want to do it right as we were punching our ticket to Bearsville, New York to record our album. Yeah, don't even get me started on that one. But the point was, I realized I can't rely on other eccentrics, you know, and
sure.
I can't like deify creatives as much as I did up to that point, because a lot of them are not stable personalities, and they're not the kind of people you can build a business with or around. Well, as much as I love the creative side of all this, I know that you need some sense of order, stability,
sure.
and you know, social norms to be able to navigate the business end of it. And I just said, I don't want to be I don't want to float through this. And so when that fell apart, I had to go into a career that was somewhat stable, but gave me a chance to do my artwork, and that was teaching art. And I made my classroom philosophy, this is my studio, I work here, I'm tolerating your presence as long as you show that. I really did, dude. And I had this philosophy from teaching kindergartners all the way to grad students at University of Miami. It was always like, I'm carving this space out. It's mine because they're letting me be here and they're paying me to be here. You're paying to be here. So these are the rules. It's my space. I'm working here. I want to show, if you're cool, I'll show you some of the stuff that I'm doing so you can experiment with it. If you try it out, I'll tell you a little bit more. And that was my philosophy to manage my career as a teacher and as an artist at the same time. Along the way, I realized that you're teaching yourself as you're teaching the kids.
Yeah.
And you're saying like the advice you're giving, you hear it so often that you have to make sure that you're, you know,
100%.
You know what I'm saying? Like following your own tools. So when that's the point.
I've gotten lost in life, I've often said, what would you tell a guest on the show? What would you tell somebody that wrote in? And I've often like spoke to myself as I do when I'm doing this part of my brain. And it's helped me out a lot, because sometimes things are just so personal that it's hard to make a decision. But you can always give your friend great advice because it's from across the street. You can see it from a distance. So I totally understand that.
And the idea was essentially like, if I'm seeing, I see these kids like succeed and fail so often, it's like a bunch of little sample sizes of what to do and what not to do.
Right.
And I relate to that time in my life so much. I'm very in tune with what it felt like to be in middle school and high school. And so I just know what I would have done at their age, what I would have done at the other age, and blah, 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 blah. And so now when I'm in my early 20s and trying to figure shit out, I'm like, I should just put all the naysaying out of my head and all the insecurities out of my head and just try shit. That's what I tell my students to do all the time. Just try it, dude. Just try it. Maybe it succeeds. Maybe just repetitions, repetitions. So all that is a long, you know, winded way to say that I find myself now in a very fortunate situation where I have experience from a lot of failures, you know, and a lot of successes, but I have my experience and I can communicate it well, I think, because of what you said, because of that experience relating to kids who did not know what they want to do and don't, you know, understand where their role is in all of this. But being able to do that, I think, is the value of Attack Peter, even more so than the artwork.
Because, I agree.
You know, the artwork's going to come and go. If it's cool and it's novel, that's great, you know, and somebody can always come up and do, I mean, I'm doing linoleum block printmaking, which is an old ass technique. It just wasn't very popular in pop culture.
Right.
And so, you know, eventually I'll have people coming up trying to do it, you know, in this realm as well. And then it'll be less novel. And so the whole time I'm thinking I shouldn't be building a business around a medium. I should be building a business around a presence and an idea that this is a place where someone's going to be open and give you a peek behind the curtain to creation. And also, you know, just make an open place to sort those things out. So I'm hoping that's what it ends up being.
Building a business around a personality is the best thing you can build a business around, because wherever you go, you can always take that personality with you. Right. And as I, at one moment in time, I had the number one design podcast on planet Earth. I was at number one. It changed nothing for my life. It did nothing for me financially. I got to a goal and I'm like, fuck, now what? And so I have diversified my interests in the last couple of years, but all of that life experience, it goes with me to wherever I go. It's an interesting thing when you're in academia, though, because you and I were inspired by people that literally set their own set of rules. But you and I aren't complete maniacs, because we realize that we know people that have gone way too crazy and people that haven't gone crazy enough. And somewhere in the middle is the place to be. And I found it hard when you're talking to people that are in the structure of you know, getting an education. These are people that are probably tethered to mom and dad's financial, you know, means. These are people that are living project to project, getting acceptance from, you know, mom and dad or the professor or a grade. And there's a certain amount of rule breaking you have to be willing to do to be good in the creative space, to really be good. You have to be able to break a certain amount of rules. So I've always found that it was a little bit hard to communicate with people at that age, because it's like, it's all gray, but there's definitely a guardrail and you don't want to go off the road, but you want to be loose at the wheel. You know, you don't want to be so tense as you're driving down the road of your career. You want to be fluid behind the wheel, but it is difficult because you and I both know a lot of people that broke a lot of rules that serve them very well, but there are exceptions to the rule and you can't lean on that. So I immediately figured out what you were doing with your YouTube channel, because I'm like, he's giving the best advice you can give somebody, but it's up to that person to take that advice and then apply real world experience to it, because that's what you're rich in. You're rich in real world experience. Hey friends, don't forget today's episode is sponsored by our friends over at SynPro Online by Pitney Bowes. This is such an efficient tool for you if you're shipping out your own orders, your own products, because you can save up to 62% in UPS daily rates and avoid surcharges. And not only is saving money important, obviously, when you're shipping things, but saving your time is so important, because You don't have to go anywhere. You can schedule all the packages to be picked up at your home. You will also be able to look at all the different carriers and figure out who's my best carrier for this particular customer and their location buying this product. And why I love this so much, for a very low price of only $4.99 a month, you have the ability to profit off of your shipping and handling. So whatever you're selling, you want to add a fair shipping rate on there, but a couple of bucks for handling. But this service, SendPro Online by Pitney Bowes, will help you make that surcharge you have on there as efficient as possible. And if you're making $3, $4, $5 an order and you're sending out 100 orders a month, that's an extra $300, $400, $500 in your pocket. So why would you not want to start at $4.99 a month? That's $4.99 a month, where you can calculate exact postage online, print everything from your personal computer, and avoid all those stupid trips to the post office. Go to pb.com/design to access this special offer for a free 30-day trial plus a free 10-pound scale to get you started and to make sure you're not overpaying on shipping anymore. That's pb.com/design. Ship like a pro, simplify your shipping, and save with a free trial of SendPro Online today from Pitney Bowes. pb.com/design. And you're absolutely right, Peter. Being in a band in your early and formative years, it will take you so much further than a college education, because you see the grit and the grime of the world, especially when you're going down that major record label signing, because you know as well as I do, you're everybody's best friend until nobody wants to take your phone call again.
Dude, I was 18 or 19 years old, and we were, as a band, taking dinners with different A&R guys from different labels. And one of them was a guy named Mike Gitter, who, if you know the punk rock scene and all that, he's a name that comes up a lot. And
I've had dinners with Mike Gitter. I know all about that character.
Okay. So, I mean, I'll just keep it to, like, I don't want to like color it too much, but the point was, I was a teenage kid and he was the best salesman of all of them.
You know,
but he taught me something as a kid that is invaluable to me now, which is, the people who come into your life that when you're rising or when you're hitting on something, some of them are super supportive because they genuinely want to work with you and have a mutually beneficial relationship. And that's fine, but you got to figure out the ones who are just trying to squeeze what they can and move on. And I got vibes like that from people like him, but it was so educational. You can't get that. You don't get that experience as a kid otherwise. And so in the art world, it's pretty like mellow. Like my whole life in the art world was pretty mellow for the last 8-9 years. It wasn't until I started doing, you know, bigger gigs with these licensed properties that I started to, you know, to see what, it's almost like I needed to do those big gigs to get feedback from others of what Attack Peter was supposed to be to them. Like everybody had a different idea of what I was doing.
Yeah.
And the whole time I was doing is trying to just make like the most kick-ass work you could see at a convention. That was my only arena. It was a comic book convention. And I'm like, okay, if I build a booth at a comic book convention, the work has to be bigger than everybody else's. It has to be handmade because barely anybody's doing handmade stuff.
Right.
And it has to be like designed in a way that if you're standing at a different booth, like a few feet away, you want to come to my booth. And that was the driving force behind all that. So the YouTube channel that you're describing, the funny thing is we only took calls that one episode that you're describing was our first time doing it. Up until that point, the whole idea behind the YouTube channel is let's make a hang that kind of like takes the place of what we were doing at the conventions, since there weren't any conventions last year. And let's kind of recreate that communal experience that comes together around the artwork. Because Gabby, my wife and I, we have a great time doing the conventions, talking to people, meeting people. And then sometimes they leave with a print, sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
But overall, we've connected and we're doing that on the show. And also showing, like doing a show and tell with whoever's watching, like here are some of our friends who are artists and they're great. You may have never heard of them. Look at their work. And at the end of it all, I think it's built just a great direct connection to the audience. Like if you want to buy a print, you can buy it from me right here. I'll do an embellished thing on it right here. You can let me decide how to embellish it. So it's just a direct connection, and I love that communal aspect.
It's funny because back in 2012, when we put up the first episode of Adventures in Design, me and my partner at the time, the great Billy Ballman of Delicious Design League, we had been doing flat stocks. We'd been doing South by Southwest. We'd been going to music festivals. And the idea was we should make a podcast. It's the conversation that happens when all of us artists get together. And it shouldn't be academic. It shouldn't be like 10 tips for Illustrator that'll change your career forever. It should be like, this shit is fucking hard. I hate my fucking clients. I feel fucking career jealousy. I feel like I don't know what I'm doing next, but everybody else has it figured out than me. And so many of that real, no bullshit, open filter conversation attracted other people in, because ultimately we all feel very similar to one another. Everybody else's career feels very real, materialized, and yours feels fake. I bet when you were talking to the major record labels, you felt like all the other bands are like real, but this is kind of, it doesn't feel real for me. You know what I mean? Like it's not going to happen. Something's going to go wrong. I mean, that's how I felt when I was going through that game. No matter who we were on the bill with, it always felt like those were real bands and mine was fucking make-believe.
100%. In fact, like the one thing I can say is I've had such awesome things happen, you know, with Attack Peter lately. Like we just launched a figure, like a designer sculpt figure for the first time, you know, and that was something I never thought I would achieve. And even when I get a goal like that, I still am riddled with this. It's like a version of imposter syndrome that is more specific than that. It's like I've created this world in my head that's been with me since I started. I mean, even thinking about doing art, you know, as a lifestyle. And it's this idea that I would be at a dinner table or at a convention or at the booth or some with Mike Mignola standing there, who's one of my heroes, with Frank Miller standing there, and you know, a bunch of other artists that I respect, and them being like, this is your work? This is shit.
Yeah.
Or worse, they wouldn't even notice it.
Yeah.
And so I'm motivated by this like potential shame, or that they would one day get one of my prints and then judge it. I'm motivated by that fantasy scenario that's never going to actually happen, you know, every day of my life. Like I need to make work that if my heroes saw it, they would be like, hey, not bad.
Do you think that's why you picked a different medium, because you're not in direct competition with your mentors?
The funny thing is I was doing a lot of paintings and illustrations before that. I just chose printmaking for two reasons, really. Number one, three reasons. Number one, it was the one medium that my students like lost their minds over every year. It was head and shoulders above everything. You know, even kids who were better in other mediums, they still prefer printmaking. And I noticed that like, this is interesting because it's kind of visceral, it's tangible, an analog. And then another reason was my lifestyle at the time was changing classrooms every hour and 90 minutes. So if I was setting up a painting to work on, like I was doing gouache paintings, I wanted to be Scott Morse, who's an amazing artist, if you know his work. And it was such a teardown and setup that I couldn't make my classes. Mm-hmm. So when I started doing like block prints, I could just take a little linoleum block and a carving tool and just pack it and move on to the next class in 2 seconds. And then finally, the last reason that I decided to stick with it over everything else was it was the best choice business-wise. Like as an entrepreneur in the art world, I was selling handmade prints that were 20-inch by 30-inch, you know, and they were cheaper often than some digital artwork posters that were being sold in the same convention. So nobody could touch me.
Yeah,
I said, this is handmade stuff. It's cheaper than some of the stuff that you're buying that's digital, you know, and it doesn't look like anything else, you know, and it gave me an edge. It gave me an edge in that arena.
Oh, I crunched the numbers on silkscreen and I was like, if I buy my own press, I bring in my own paper, I'm at a hard cost of like 25, 50 cents per 18 by 24 print that I'm going to then sell for $20, $30, $40. So for me, it was mere survival on, if we get permission to do posters for a band and the band pays us up front and the club gives us money. So we're like, we broke even out of the gate. So that first poster that we sell is pure profit. It was following that line of thinking that got us way further down a path. But it was that entry level of, because, you know, I see a lot of people that, you know, the world's kind of set up for people to get it right now. Like, you know, there's all these merch companies. Give us your artwork and we'll sell it for you so easily. Just upload a GIF and we can put it on anything. And there's so many people right now that are existing at margins that ruin them as artists because they can't just experiment. They can't just knock out a Sunday making something and print it for fun because they have to send it out the door. They have to pay big money to get it done. So there's so much pressure, right? Like there's so much pressure that every product has to be crucial because it's $700 coming out of their bank account. Whereas you and I, it was like, I got $25 invested in this. I can do whatever the hell I want. A lot of them were failures, but you're able to follow those successes. And I don't feel like a lot of artists get that opportunity anymore because they're not doing what you and I did, creating a print shop, going hands-on, and really taking this whole thing on so that it's money's not even a part of it. It's all about the creativity. You know, it's more about making money than spending money.
100%. And at the same time, like you mentioned before, like I became the means of production. So when I was sending out files to be printed digitally, all that kind of stuff, I was always at the whim of somebody else's, you know, schedule. But, you know, that all dovetails back into, I think the first question you asked is like, how do I decide when I do a Spider-Man print to sell? When do I do one to study technique, all that kind of stuff? And the reality was when I first came up, and I've had this discussion with other artists, the reality was, dude, like I'm in Miami. Miami is starting to become like a bigger pop culture city than it was at the time.
Sure.
It was a dead zone, dude. And if I'm setting up at a convention, I'm paying $200 for a table. I got to sell, dude. I want to sell so I can get money to do another convention. I can go to Orlando. I can go to Tampa. And so the reality was back then I was doing gallery shows in Miami and I sold out of a whole gallery show, my first solo show.
Wow.
And I could not get a concrete date for the next show.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the fuck is this, dude?
I'm
talking about making money, dude. Like, let's do this so that we can keep. And for me, by the way, I keep talking about business. I feel like I have a moral obligation to be successful financially. And that's the only way I'm going to be able to lift somebody up in the future is if I'm successful enough financially that I can build a platform for other artists that I discover.
Dude.
I don't feel like there's any nobility in like not discussing the financial successes. It has to happen.
So let's go back a little bit in our timeline here. 2012, when we put up our first podcast.
Right.
Out of the gate, we're just like, we're never going to fucking apologize for making money. Because this whole idea that you're an artist and you should, fuck you. If that's what you want to hear, go elsewhere. Because I'm not going to be your fucking poster boy. Yeah. And it's always been a very non-apologetic angle on, we should get paid. Because guess what? Money is the means to get a chance to do it all over again. You can only go so far as a hobbyist. You can only go so far doing things where you're not making money. And I feel you, man, because I come from the music world like you do. And, you know, I'm older, but back in the 90s, there was this whole like, yeah, don't be a sellout, man. You don't want to sell out. Don't want to sell out. I mean, the good thing is like nowadays, selling out is cool. You know, people will watch videos on YouTube if the thumbnail is a little like, just bought a Lamborghini and drove it into a wall. You know what I mean? Like the disrespect for money is like the coolest thing that people love right now. It's clickbait. But getting into the mindset of the artist, I totally feel you like that because there used to be this weird notion that somehow money was the evilness of it. And it's like, no, man, money is what makes all of this happen. So you got to get your money brain as tight as your creative brain.
You don't have to be a douchebag to be successful financially. And and the funny thing is when we were coming up in the bands, there were so many, again, to tie it back to this, there were so many rules and taboos and in that stupid little band world.
Yes.
And now I'm 37 years old thinking about a bunch of teenagers having a fucking code of ethics. Shut the fuck up. Like, we didn't know anything that we were talking about. We were just repeating stupid shit.
Yeah.
And so now it's like, I pick up on that in adults when I'm listening to conversations, when I'm on business meetings. I pick up on who's actually making statements and decisions based on logic and who is just repeating norms. One of the things I got told repeatedly by some friends when I was kind of like starting to come up a little bit in the last few years was, don't go after a gig. Like,
what?
If there's a gig you want, for example, with a company you want, it is not like it's like a taboo to go and request the gig, like to approach the company and say, hey, I want to work with you on this thing. Hmm. It's the right thing to do is to make the work and they'll come to you. Hmm. I'm like, are you out of your fucking mind, dude? Do you not understand how social media works? Do you understand how like attention is garnered nowadays? I literally would take my block prints, knowing that I have an advantage if I put the print in someone's hand because the paper's handmade.
Right.
It's
right.
A handmade print, all that.
I know that.
I would roll up the prints and I would go to any event that I could that an artist or a company was going to be at, and I would put the print in their hand. I'm like, yo, what do you think about this? And then I say, you want to talk about doing something? And every time it succeeded. Every time it succeeded.
Yeah.
Same thing happened with working with Mondo. I literally sent a tube of prints to the Mondo offices. And I said, check this out in person because it's not going to translate well online as
right,
well.
Right, because it's not a lot of color, not all the textures that those guys use. But when you see an awesome woodblock print in your hands, that grit to it, that you can tell that there was an artist just there. It feels like real art. One of my good friends, Derek Castle, is so good at this medium. And I just love watching work. I love the work that he does. And even though to an untrained eye, it can look simple compared to other things, there is so much that's going on with it. You know, Peter, my vibe on that was I really wanted to work for Disneyland when I was ending my design career. And so there are some companies where there's not a door into it, right? Yeah. Like I live in Los Angeles and so many of the studios, it's like there's a firewall around it. And as you get to meet people that work in Hollywood, it all of a sudden seems more accessible. But when you're a kid from fucking Kentucky like I am, it just seems like you can't get in there. And so what I started to do was I studied how Disney had done all of their artwork over the last decades. And I basically made a manifesto of like, these are the guidelines that they follow when they make artwork. And whatever gig came my way, I put it through the Disney guidelines. I started using their rules on composition. I started using their rules on everything. And I knew that being out here and doing 50 shows a year, somebody from Disney would come into my booth, see what I was doing and go, huh, this looks like our stuff. And that's exactly how I got hired to work for Disney to end my career. And it was me auditioning for the job that I wanted. So whether you have the means like you did to send a package into Mondo and be like, hey, I'm the guy, hire me, or just start doing your own background work and making stuff that looks like that, there are so many ways to get in.
That's definitely step one, is to make sure you're doing the best work you possibly can and understanding who your audience is and going to be, you know, like you got to be smart. You can't, there's certain things I wouldn't send to certain companies and all that kind of stuff. But you know how I got signed, dude, as a 19-year-old with the band? I used to like take my CDs and demo tapes and sneak backstage. Like I would make fake backstage passes, clip them to my belt. I would watch how roadies walked. I would see like where there is a walk. Yeah, I swear to God. And I would just walk right back in. And I got to meet, you know, so many bands that way. And that's how I got my demo tape into the hands of different labels.
Yeah.
I hid under a trailer one time. I just laid down under the trailer like Mission Impossible. And I rolled out into the backstage. There was no way otherwise. If there was a way, I would have done it, but there wasn't. And so now when people tell me like, oh, well, you got to wait for them to kind of, I'm like, okay, dude.
No.
Well, that's, see how that works out.
That's somebody who doesn't take chances. My way of getting into shows when I was underage, I used to go through the back door with a guitar in my hand. If you have a guitar case, brilliant. If you have a guitar in your hand, I would just go in, walk in with an empty guitar case because I didn't want anybody to steal a guitar. I would sit the guitar case right by the door, go watch the show, and at the end of the night, grab my guitar case and go back out the back.
I never thought. Brilliant, dude.
That's really good. I saw so many bands play when I was, you know, 18 and 19, just waiting to turn 21. And that was my rig on getting in the back door. So
you had Chris Sherry on your show, by the way?
No. Oh, Chris Sherry.
He's the artist who's done like a lot of the Descendants artwork.
I have. Okay. I have. And I regret that interview because I talked to him a lot about being a teacher and not a lot about the Descendants, but I was very fascinated at that high school part of his life and also trying to figure out like, are the kids okay? Because I love high school culture. I spend so much of my time watching things that are set back in, you know, that precious moment in time, kind of like the saddest, happiest moment for many of us. So this is what I want to talk to you about. Your wife is Gabby is a jack of all trades. You go over to her Instagram, there's like no craft this woman can't crush. And she also, she's your booth partner. She goes out and travels with you. She does the YouTube channel with you. Dude, my wife was my business partner too. And I cannot express how amazing it is when everybody in the couple, which is two people, is is on the same page and has the same interest. It's like, you don't care if you go out to eat dinner back in the old days and the entire conversation becomes about work because you both care about the same things. And that's, I really, really like that about what you guys were doing because it was so reminiscent of Beth and I going out and just crushing so many road trips and tours.
And not only that, like she could do a version of what I do on her own if she really wanted to, because she's engaging. She's funny. She's a teacher too, by the way. So
what does she teach
there? Yeah. Oh, she teaches history and government. Cool. At high school level, cool. But she's been teaching for a few years at middle school too. But she's and before that, she used to manage a tattoo shop, go to the tattoo conventions, and so like she knows, dude. She knows the world. She knows, you know, artists, and she has fun with it. She's great. You know, she's dude. We both taught ourselves how to run a live stream. Like, so now she's back here using soundboards and running OBS and. And it's like, she's just fun, dude. And she loves the hype and loves the fun. And I'm telling you, like, I feel like eventually it'll be an official thing where, you know, she is the another part of the brand just as much as it is now. You know?
Yeah. Hey friends, I hope you enjoyed listening to part one of today's episode of Adventures in Design with our new friend, Attack Peter. Coming up in part two, we really bond a lot about YouTube and how using YouTube as a platform to grow your audience can be a really amazing tool. And here's the thing that I want to tell you. You don't need big numbers to see a difference in your career by being on YouTube. There's a sort of a big misnomer that, well, you know, you have to have hundreds of thousands of subs or millions of subs before YouTube is worth your while. And it's not true. If you have a funnel, if you have a way where you're taking YouTube as an entry point to push people over into your online store, to push people over to your illustration or freelance skills, or in my example, push people over into your paid community with Club 1313 that I started, you don't need big numbers to make big results. And, you know, I'm just sitting on the edge now of getting ready to hit 7,000 subscribers. And YouTube's doing a lot of wonders for me in the whole rest of my career. And Peter is under 2,000 subs, but is really building a strong community of people that are resonating with him. And in part two, we talk a lot about how I believe in somebody who knows from life experience, how this is really going to pay off for Attack Peter and Gabby when they get back out touring on the artist circuit. Also in part two, we talk all about Peter's reverse apology tour, how he kind of wants to circle around and talk to all the, doubters and naysayers that thought maybe his dreams were too ambitious, but it seems that the hard work ethic and talent has caught up with whatever those dreams may have been. And then last but not least, it's a topic that I love diving into, especially with all the fucking bullshit we went through the last 4 years. I always love talking to people that are sons and daughters of first generation immigrants. I love talking to them about that responsibility that they feel like they carry on their shoulders because someone gave up a lot and risked a lot to give them the life that they have. And to me, it's just one of the most American patriotic type conversations you can have. And I just love having that conversation. And today was no different than the other times that we've dipped our toes in that topic that most white guys wouldn't talk to somebody about. Friends, all of this and so much more is coming up in part two with Attack Peter. If you're new here, head over to AID.network, become a member of the Circle of Trust. That's how you unlock the full part of every episode, but also how you get into the back catalog of over 1,300 episodes. So if you're enjoying this sort of casual way of breaking down big creative problem solving and building a career, that's what I'm going to say I'm the best at. I have lived 9 lives. I've interviewed 900 people about their 9 lives. You know, if you do the monkey math there, that's like what, 8,100 lives? No, it's got to be more than that, like 800, 10,000. Like, I don't know. You'll do the math. Somebody in the comments will tell me how wrong I am. What I'm saying, though, is there's a lot of life experience broken down in a very conversational way on each and every episode of Adventures in Design. Part two with our new friend Attack Peter starts right now, only for members of the Circle of Trust over at AID.network. Let me just get all this straight.
Yeah.
You don't teach anymore.
No.
You just do art full time.
Yeah, so amazing. Okay, don't get, that's the camera. I got to get a better software.
Oh, I asked him another question and now he turned the camera off on me.
Yeah, so for years I was teaching full time and then I was doing artwork on the side. But yep. For the last few years before I quit teaching, I was waking up at 4:30 every morning to get to school by 5:30 to work for 2 hours before the first kid walked in.
Wow.
And because I was really trying to step up, you know, and yeah. taking bigger gigs, and it was exhausting. And right around that time, I was doing my second designer con. I met a few people from Skybound Entertainment. In fact, they had reached out to me before. Big Clutch? Oh, so you know Sean. Yeah.
Yeah, I know Sean.
Oh, yeah. So you know the type of people we're talking about here, man. Just the best of the best. And yeah, Sean came up to my booth. Well, we had talked a little bit before about me working on a project for Skybound. And at the time, I had so much on my plate. I kind of like had to turn them down because it was just, I couldn't do it. I couldn't, yeah. and I didn't want to overpromise, you know? And so even though I had turned them down, they came to my booth at Designer Con and I thought they were just going to try to woo me in to do the project again. And I said, you guys are super nice. You guys are great. But yeah, I just kind of like, I want to do my own thing. You know, I want to work on Takaro, my own kaiju monster, work on my own IP and stories and kind of build out Attack Peter a little bit more because I'm feeling some momentum. And they're like, no, yeah, dude, that's what we're thinking. We're thinking you just kind of come be Attack Peter at Skybound and we'll handle everything that's not art. So we'll ship your prints, we'll manage your e-commerce, we'll, you know, everything, dude, everything. And, you know, now like I get health insurance, benefits, salary, and, you know, we does everything I want to do, we do it. Like they just say, what do you want to do? And they go, okay, Skybound's an amazing and unique company in that they've built out this kind of like amazing wheel of opportunities. Like they have, you know, video games and TV and comics and books. And, you know, man, it's just like the contacts and the opportunities are never ending. So they just put the creator in the center.
Yeah.
And they figure out how to like, you know, get different things going. And it's just amazing, dude. I can't express how how the last year has been so bizarre and that it's one of the worst years we've ever experienced. But for me, it's been like the pre-alpha launch phase of Attack Peter because I've been learning the business, you know.
What a phrase, pre-alpha launch phase.
Yeah, dude, it's like, and so it's just been, and it's been blowing up in this crazy situation. So I can't even imagine when we're back out doing shows and meeting and touring and all that kind of stuff. It's going to be bonkers because we've created this rhythm, this flow where I can just be in creative headspace.
Right.
Just crazy. You know right. how
yeah.
like
yeah.
important that is. Like I don't like when I would have to stop and now make shipping labels or, you know, and
all the things that break your flow, man.
It just, yeah. And so I think that what the promise of a record label was to me as a kid actually is working for me as an artist. And I think that they're super ahead of the curve on this. And if I can do everything that I think we're going to do, and if I think everything pans out the way I think it's going to, I think eventually it's going to be a model for companies to find in-house artists to be themselves, not just to be like an in-house designer,
right?
To an artist to be their own self. And, you know, imagine if you were like, I don't know, imagine if you were a gallery who got, you know, shag on your staff early on.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and so I think that's what this is. And so everybody's invested in the success, but there's stability. There's a team. There's like an engine.
Oh, they're unreal, Skybound's office. So I've been to,
okay, awesome.
All the offices out here in LA, right? Cartoon Network, where they're like, hey, you want a pancake? That guy over there just makes pancakes for people. So cool. Like, you guys got a pancake guy?
Yeah.
But Skybound to me was the most impressive because there wasn't a secondary product, right? It wasn't a TV network. It wasn't one of the movie studios I've been to. The product was art. And then they find a medium that is the distribution for that art. And Sean Kirkham, who we're talking about, who is sort of the, you know, the A&R creative guy over at Skybound, I told him, I said, look, man, you've got the second best office I've ever done an interview in. And he's like, who's got a better office than me? I'm like, Bobby Hundreds has the best office in LA, but you've got a second best office. And Bobby Hundreds is in first place by a long shot. But their whole structure of what they're doing, I totally felt just like you when I went in there. I'm like, this is the record label for consumer products. This is the record label for where the world is going, because some things you can't download. And my career goes from being in a band to working in the music industry to seeing Steve Jobs say, hey, this is iTunes. Hey, this is an iPod. And me being like, I got to get a new fucking job. And I had always said, movies only benefit, the only benefit, the only reason why movies had like a 10-year run over audio was file size. But as soon as the internet got fast enough and the compression model got good enough, you know, now movies are threatened too. But you can't download, you know, a board game. You can't download an action figure. Right. And consumer goods have sort of become the new American dream, and that there's a lot of people that have high paying jobs that can't afford to buy a home in the city they live in, but they can't afford to make life fun and buy Funko Pop when it drops every 30 days. And when you go to Designer Con, and I've been to nearly all of them, and I was the host, the MC of it 2 years in a row, you start to see this trend in consumerism where it's high-level professionals that make really good money. These aren't dumb fans. These are people that have expendable income, and they want to make shopping fun again. They want to get into collectability. They want to try to like live out some sort of, you know, nostalgia from their childhood. And I feel like that is that in in-person entertainment, like theme park entertainment, that is the two ways that money will get spent the most in the 2020s and the 2030s, because the malls are gone.
Yeah,
the music is free. The movie theaters are done. It's that sort of experiential entertainment where people are going to take their expendable income.
100%, dude. And I think at the core of all of that is keeping people aware of the community behind the scenes as well as in front of the scenes. Like, I'm always, one of my favorite things about Skybound is that Sean is Big Clutch, is that he's a face that people know, right? And so, like, as a kid, I knew Stan Lee.
Yeah.
You know, I knew, you know, I didn't know, as a kid who read Marvel and DC comics, I didn't know who the DC guy was, and he wasn't as cool. I knew Stan Lee, and then I knew Todd McFarlane, and that was a game changer for me. And I feel like we, going forward, need to value that because it kind of warms up the coldness of what a consumer product can be if it's not attached to anything. Like, the fact that somebody comes to my YouTube channel and hangs with us for an hour, and sometimes they'll buy a print, maybe not, maybe they buy a shirt, maybe not, maybe they just hang. But when they do get something and it arrives at their house, it's an artifact of the experience.
Right.
And to me, if we go forward, whatever we work on and whatever we design, if we start to remember, especially after this year, dude, where everybody was disconnected in a lot of ways, if we start to like realize that our biggest priority and our biggest desire is connectedness and community, then everything that we create should be an artifact or an aspiration to that. And I feel like that is what we're doing differently. That's what's fun about me and Gabby on the streams together. You're literally coming and hanging with us at our house, you know, like that's it.
And there's something so intimate about that, that it immediately, here's where your YouTube channel is going to really do you well. And it sounds like you and I had a very similar goal. When the pandemic went past the first 2 weeks, I immediately, when everybody started to like, oh fuck, this is real, I immediately said to myself, this is one of those moments in history that defines people and businesses and who you are. And there's going to be a lot of losers. There's going to be a lot of people that lose a lot, but there's also going to be people that are a winner. And I decided early on, like, I'm going to make 2020 a pivotal moment in my career, and I'm going to come out the other side a winner. And I'd love to hear that from you too. But why 2020 benefited you is you and your wife built the channel. You built your, you know, your on-air rapport. You got the equipment in. You figured out OBS. These aren't interesting things to do.
They're like,
figuring out a fucking stream key will make you go nuts. But,
yes, dude.
But when that next Designer Con pops and you have a booth there, you're going to have a line twice as long as the guy who maybe sells the, you know, let's say, I'm just going to pull a number out of my hat.
Sure.
You do $100,000 in sales, and the guy across from you does $100,000 in sales annually, right? So here's an artist that you're comparable. Like, you sell the same amount of stuff annually, okay? Just making up a make-believe number.
Yeah.
You're going to have a line three times longer than that guy because people are going to spend time with you. They're going to talk to you. You're going to have taken their phone call. You're going to help them out with something in their career, and they're going to be thankful to have that moment with you and to meet you. So all of the time that you've invested in this, I'm going to tell you right now, from somebody who knows, from having been doing this for a while, your conventions will be different for the rest of your life because you are now a face and people are going to want to see the both of you, get a photo with both of you.
Yeah.
People
are
going to tell Gabby, like, you know, I didn't understand my husband's career or I didn't understand my wife's career. And you helped me see my position in it. Like what you guys have done, you may not totally realize how it's going to materialize, but I do. And let me tell you, well played. You couldn't have done anything better with your year.
And you know what, man? I don't think we could have like done it if we were trying to do that. For, you know, I think we just, what our natural, you know, tendencies are, is that we love to hang. Dude, we just bought a house recently, you
Congrats.
Know, and thank you. And one of the things that we said is like, look, we don't have kids. Let's turn the extra guest room into a little arcade. And so we bought these like arcade cabinets from Arcade 1UP. They're kind of cheap for what they are. But the goal is eventually we want to be the house where people come over and hang and all that kind of thing. And we've always wanted to do that. We've always loved that. We love that about conventions, you know, and now doing that here, I hope you're right, because we love it and we love seeing return people coming back on the streams week after week. We get to know them. We stay in touch with them. It's awesome, dude. It's community, and it's the one thing